Welcome to New Reality. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is an ongoing series about the spiritual awakening that seems to be happening in this country and around the world. And many people are experiencing this realm of the other, this realm of a alternate self, of a higher self, and that includes people who had near-death experiences, like my guest tonight, David Bennett. He has an incredible story, and I'm going to be talking about that, and also what we can do with this gift of this experience. And David will be in New York tomorrow evening. That's March 28th at the Meta Center at 7 p.m., and that is 214 West 29th Street in Manhattan. Welcome, David.
Alan, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I heard you on Coast to Coast. I was very excited, and I wanted to really hear the whole story of what happens if you're not. And you've also written a book about what happened to you. And I mean, where do you like to begin? I mean, in your blurb to your book, you say my physical body was gone. I was becoming formless, a sliver of light, which was like the light around me. As the intensity of the light around me increased, the intensity of my fragment of light increased, and I began to merge with it. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, in 83, I was the chief engineer of a research vessel, and we had an accident about 2 miles off the California coast, and in that accident, I drowned, and it was in pretty intense 25-foot sea. But once I drowned, I found myself in this absolute blackness. Absolute darkness. But I felt like I didn't feel like I was alone, and because I just died this very violent death, it wasn't frightening at all. In fact, I was curious because I'm also trained as a commercial diver. So to be in the water and even in a violent situation, it wasn't something that that had me all that troubled. But once I died and I found myself in this blackness, I was curious, like, you know, what is this? What's going on?
But the thing, wait, I just want to interrupt, if you don't mind, just for a second. And you said, okay, you died, but then you were still conscious. It sounds like you were still aware of the self. And I thought, and sometimes they say the self dissolves, but I guess it doesn't, as you're saying.
Huh? Well, it's curious. It's like my consciousness didn't skip a beat. My consciousness still existed, and I guess that's why I was so curious, because I didn't quite understand. At first, I didn't realize I had died. I didn't know I had died. I just thought that this was another state of oxygen deprivation or something like that, because I had gone through that training in diver school, you know. So I was just very curious at first until I saw the light, and the light started to come toward me, and it embraced me. It embraced me with this love that was like nothing I'd ever felt before. I had a pretty dysfunctional life prior to my experience, and so I never knew how loved I was until I had this experience.
And you weren't open to any of that kind of spirituality.
No, you know, it's kind of funny, Alan. I was, prior to my experience, I was lived with a lot of different families. I was thrown from one family to another. And so I was exposed to a lot of different belief systems and that sort of thing. But I never really adopted any of them, you know. I had more of a survivalist type of attitude, you know. And my philosophy was you cut your swath through life and you survive. Now, that was...
So you were involved in... So before that death, you were in a severe storm at sea. Is that what was happening?
Yes, we were trying to... They wouldn't let the ship in the harbor. So the captain decided we had an engineer on board that needed to get to LAX airport, and so we needed to get him into the harbor somehow. And the captain decided to put one of the small Zodiacs into the water. And because I was third officer, I was the chief engineer, I knew the harbor really well. Normally, I don't get on the small boats, but because it was so rough, and we had a pretty green crew on board as far as our mates were, and so Captain felt it would be best if I went along. We actually wore life vests this night, though, because we're all, you know, we're all divers and people. We've lived our lives at sea, most of us, so we never wore life vests, but this night it was one of those nights we actually wore our life vests.
Were you afraid at that point? Because I mean, I guess you were an experienced sea person, but still, was there any fear about the storm itself as it was going on?
Not really. I was an adrenaline junkie, so I got a thrill out of doing things a little daring, you know. And this was one of those slightly daring. In fact, we weren't all that concerned about it because we just felt this Zodiac could pretty much handle anything because we'd retrieve submarines in rougher seas than this. But we were 2 miles offshore, so at 2 miles offshore, you just see the rolling, you know, the swells. You don't see the crashing waves or anything like that. And on our way in, we got blown about a mile south of the harbor. We got blown off course, and we ended up falling off a 25-footer within a second, just boom. And then we tried to turn the little Zodiac around, and when we did, the next one was right there on top of us. It came down on top of us, and it folded that Zodiac in half like a peanut butter sandwich, and it catapulted me into the water. And I immediately lost my sense of direction because as I was, the ocean was just, it was ferocious. It was just tumbling and tossing me in the water, and so I was just hanging on to this life vest, expecting it to carry me up to the surface. But
were you tied to the Zodiac? Were you roped to it?
No, I wasn't. None of us were. We were just in the Zodiac, just you know, trying to make it in the shore, and so you know, I finally drowned. You know, finally, you can only hold your breath so long.
And where were you? Which part of the world were you in?
We were off the coast of California, just outside Ventura.
Oh, I see. So you drowned, and then, I mean, okay, tell us that story, and then also tell us how you got saved. I mean, how you got back alive. But when you drowned, when you died, when you went to the light, what else happened to you there?
Yeah, when I mentioned the darkness, and from the darkness I saw the light, and the light felt like it was moving toward me, or I was moving toward it, but that's never been clear to me. But as I got closer to the light, and I was feeling wrapped in that love, I was just in awe of this light, because this light was infinite. It was everything. And it looked like millions upon millions of fragments of light. And they were all interacting together, and it was almost like a giant dance of this light. It was amazing. It was phenomenal. Something just so immense and so beautiful that I was in awe of watching it. And then three fragments broke away, came and greeted me. And when they greeted me, they welcomed me. They welcomed me home. And I recognized them. I recognized them as family. Now, in this life, I didn't have a lot of family. Like I said, I was thrown around from one family to the next. But I recognized them as, like, my true family. And I call them my soul family. And eventually, there were a dozen that came and they greeted me, and we went into the light. We went and merged into the light, and I started to experience my life. We went to this area that was, to me, it felt very spherical, and I started to relive my life. It wasn't just me reliving my life. My soul family, they relived my life with me. And as we
No, I'm just taking it in. No, I'm listening.
Yeah.
listening.
Yeah, and as I was reliving it, I was experiencing it in such a way. It was like I was reliving every interaction that I'd ever had in my life. I relived, and I got to see it from the other person's point of views. So, as well as my own. So it was like my consciousness fragmented into these multiple streams, and I was looking at all of these interactions in my life through all these different points of view, and I got to feel the hurt and the pain, the love and the joy, and it was incredibly humbling to be able to experience your life in that way, and it was incredibly intense as well. And
but you felt all the emotions of those interactions. Is that what the intensity was?
Yes, it was. Well, and the after effects, because it's like whenever we set something in motion, whenever we interact with each other, we create a flow of energy amongst ourselves, and it perpetuates itself. It keeps going. So I was seeing the after effects of these actions that I had taken, and like I said, I was a pretty brash young man, so I saw a lot of things that I wasn't all that thrilled about, and I really didn't want this newfound soul family that were loving me so intently to have to experience some of these unsavory parts of my life. So but they just loved me, and they supported me through it. They didn't judge me for it or anything like that. It was like I brought my own judgment into this death, and I was. It's almost as if this life review, whatever you want to call it, was like it was my opportunity to let go of all of that. You know, to let go of that and to see how far-reaching our interactions in life are. And then I started seeing things that I didn't have a reference to in this life. And at the time, I didn't realize it, but I was actually seeing my future. And I got to experience some of my future. It was a little disorienting, but my soul family just supported me. They sent me more love. And that just, it helped me get through it. Mm-hmm. And then the light itself spoke to me. The light just, it was like a resonance through my body. It said, "This is not your time. You must return." Well, I said, "No way." I wasn't going to go back. I argued. I absolutely argued. I said, "No, I'm not. I don't want to go back because I've got a family here I never knew. I'm loved like I never knew I was loved. And I don't want to go back. I know that body is broken. And I didn't see any reason. So I argued with the light and to stay there. And the light spoke to me one more time. It said, "No, you must return. You have a purpose." And it's kind of funny, Alan, when we're in that light and we're connected to a consciousness that's so much greater than just ourselves. I like to say it's like we're connected to all the souls that ever were and all the souls that ever will be. And through that interconnection, we have such a great consciousness, or greater consciousness, that I understood that word purpose, because it just resonated into my being. And I understood that word purpose. And so with understanding, I just accepted it. And with acceptance, that's when I found myself back outside my body. I was watching my body as it was still in the waves, being tumbled and tossed. It was still underwater. But it got caught up in one of the bow line of the wreckage from that Zodiac, had wrapped itself around my right arm, and a set of waves hit that wreckage, and one of the pontoons in the Zodiac still had a little bit of air in it, and so it popped it up to the surface. And when it did, it cinched that line around my arm. It actually dislocated my shoulder and my thumb as it pulled my body up to the surface.
Well, that's and pretty miraculous, isn't that? I mean, just that action alone.
Yeah. Yes, and I'm outside my body watching this. And wow. It's kind of interesting because three of my soul family were with me. So I had three light beings with me and myself, and were watching my body as it's going through all this and then being pulled up to the surface. Mm-hmm. And I was mesmerized by it because I was trying to figure out how is the enormity of me, my true being, my totality, how am I going to fit in that body? And so when the waves were crashing up against this wreckage, it pounded my body up against this wreckage, and that's what actually pushed some of the salt water out of my lungs. And my soul family gave me a little bit of a push, and I ended up back in my body.
And when you got back in your body, you remembered where you were just before that?
Yes, totally. In fact, I was. The only bad thing was I was using my brain now and not my greater consciousness, and so I was puzzling about this purpose, you know, because I understood it when I was in the light, but now I'm back in my body and I'm puzzling over purpose. What's this purpose? You know, I couldn't quite grasp it. It was like it was just beyond my grasp. And at the same time, I'm trying to survive in 25-foot seas, and I'm trying to cough up salt water, and I had all these things going on. And fortunately, my mates had been looking for me. They'd been looking for me, and
They were still in the Zodiac. They never got thrown off.
No. The Zodiac was destroyed. They were in the water as well. And they had all rallied together around a flashlight, and so they were, God bless, they could have just immediately gone and started swimming in for shore. You know, we were still a mile offshore, because it was dangerous out there. We're in this breaker zone. It was incredibly dangerous, and they stayed there looking for me for about 12 minutes.
Wow.
Which was amazing. And they found me. And when they found me, then we all had that mile to swim. But I kept going underwater. I couldn't stay up on the surface, but I was still kind of half connected to that greater consciousness, to the point that I instinctively knew there was something wrong with my life vest. And when I opened my life vest up, it turned that the inside of it had dry rotted. It was such an old, one of those old fiber-filled life vests, and it was so old that it had dry-rotted, and the sea had gotten into the fiber filling, and it was actually what was dragging me down.
Oh. So you threw that away and just swam, huh?
Yeah, so I threw that away, and we all hung on to the wreckage of the Zodiac that still had that little bit of air, and we all had a mile to swim in those raging seas, and I had a dislocated shoulder, and it was a tough night.
Well, then you get back to shore, but you still have memory of everything that happened to you.
Yeah, and it was, and you don't know what to do with it at first, Alan. You're kind of like, you know, what was that, and who do I share it with? You know, because I mean, that's the first challenge is accepting. You just had this spiritual experience that was, you know, outside of our reality, and then you know, it totally immersed into some different reality. And now I'm back in this life, and I feel like I'm in this body that's confined and dense, and whereas in the experience, it felt more alive, more real than this life here. And so, you know, how do you deal with that? What do you do with that? You know, I mean, that was a big challenge for me. And
so what happened? Yeah.
Well, I tried to share it with my first wife, and it scared her. So I couldn't talk to her about it. She just had a very bad reaction, and I couldn't talk to her about it. And then, because we worked in a very dangerous field, the vessel that I was the chief engineer of was a research vessel. We did underwater exploration, and so we did a lot of dangerous work. And in that type of work, we put each other's lives in each other's hands all the time, and so death was a taboo subject. I really couldn't talk to those guys, and those were the people that I lived with 9 months out of the year, you know, were these crews that would come on and off the ship. So I didn't feel like I could share it with them. It was one of those subjects that you just don't talk about. So I felt isolated. And that was tough because, you know, what do you do? And I started, right after this experience, I started getting these intuitive knowings. And I didn't know what to do with them. I'm trained as an engineer. Logic and reason is my way of dealing with life. So I just didn't know how to deal with this intuitive knowing. So what I did was I tested it. Whenever I would receive one of these knowings, it was almost like a download of information about things I didn't have any way of knowing before. It wasn't something I'd experienced in life, and it wasn't something I studied at school. So it was like, how do I know this? You know, so I would go and I would research it, and I would find out, is this reliable information or isn't it? And I found it was. And I began to rely on that, you know. I also started seeing auras. At the time, I didn't know what an aura was. You know, this is back in 1983, and to me, it was, I called them life force energies, because it just seemed like this life force around everything, around people, plants, rocks, everything had this energy around it. And to tell you the truth, Alan, it freaked me out because I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. I didn't have any, you know, any resources back then to go into it. And it was something so outside my life prior that I wanted my old life back. It freaked me out, and I wanted my...
Did you think you were going crazy, like made the whole thing up and kind of, you know... Off me like you kind of snapped or something, like the pressure of stress or something. I mean, was those doubts in your mind?
You know, of course, I think we all go through that when we have some kind of altered reality enter our life. I think we all go through that a little bit. You know, we instinctively reach back to our, you know, our fear, and we retreat a little bit. And that's what I did. I retreated a little bit. I wanted to forget about the experience. I couldn't let go of the intuitive knowings because they just wouldn't stop. So I had to learn how to live with those. And so for 11 years, I didn't share my experience.
So then what happened to make you sort of wake up to the reality that it was true?
Well, the light called me back into the light. And 11 years later, I had quit my life at sea. I became the manager of the dialysis programs here in Central New York. And I was on a retreat, a spiritual retreat. And I was actually beginning my practice to go into a meditation when all of a sudden the light spoke to me. It told me to return to the light. And there was no stopping it. It pulled me back, and I relived my whole near-death scenario, the life review, the soul family, the light, everything. Only this time I wasn't near death. I wasn't drowning. I was just in a meditation.
No, I'm just curious because I'm sure you were probably wondering all those years about your soul family and maybe even trying to connect with them somehow.
You know, for those 11 years, I was so freaked out by it that I tried to forget it. I really did. And what I think I did is that I set myself up for a spiritual crisis that happened 11 years later when I had this second experience. I suddenly started having, I couldn't turn it off. I kept reliving this experience until I finally came to the acceptance of what the experience really was all about, you know. And
what was it all about? Yeah.
Well, it was about accepting that, you know, we're so much more than ourselves, and that we, you know, that within us, there's this, we have a fragment of our light that resides within us, and our greater totality exists there with the oneness. And so we all have this capacity to connect to our essence, our being. I like to call it our true being. And so through this second experience, I finally came to the acceptance that I need to integrate these experiences into my life so that I can start living more like an authentic being, more like who I really am. Because I've been introduced to my true being twice now, you know, and I'm not honoring that. I'm not living that path. So it was like the first experience was like a seed of transformation that was planted in my being. And if I had gone through normal integration, then that seed would have had an opportunity to bloom, and I would have, my integration was kind of retarded for 11 years because I really didn't do anything with it. I tried to ignore it as much as I could. But after that second experience, I was fortunate enough to start running into other experiencers, other people who have had transformative experiences, and not just near-death experiencers. It's kind of interesting. A lot of the research is beginning to show now that you don't have to die to have these experiences. A lot of people have spiritually transformative experiences, and they go through the same after effects. They go through, you know, the same integration process to be able to live with these experiences, with these spiritual experiences. And so,
yeah, listening.
So after my second one, I tried to start living by what I learned. I called it my quiet ministry. You know, it was what I was going to do is I was going to live in the way that exemplified what I learned in these experiences, because I now understood that there's a divinity within us, and I recognize that, and that there's a divinity in everyone, and that we're interconnected. Because in these in this life review, I saw the interconnectedness between us all, and so I began, it changed the way I started living my life. I started living my life where truth was like the truth and love were my anchors. You know, I needed that in my life. And it's kind of interesting, these experiences, there's a lot of after effects, you know, like, well, first, you're not afraid of dying anymore because, and you really begin to live your life because you can let go of that fear. So you can begin to just, it releases so much. We don't realize how much our culture has taught us to fear death, that when we let go of that fear, we're unshackled. We can start to live our life, you know, freely. And it's quite liberating, actually.
You said you realized, because of that second awakening, you weren't just the limited body and you wanted to live this greater light experience. But how do you live it? How do you show that to the world?
Well, it's a slow process. I mean, you don't change overnight. After you have one of those experiences, it takes time. And everyone becomes kind of a seeker in many ways. You know, we start looking for what in my life exemplifies what I'd learned in these experiences. And I found that when I would do things with loving intention, that it had the same type of resonance as when I was in the light. And also I found, and in order to kind of focus in on that, I realized that when we do things that are inspirational to us, like for me at the time, I started doing some things to be creative, because I felt like my job was so analytical that I needed some balance in my life. And I realized that creativity is many times the threshold for inspiration. And I believe that inspiration is the doorway to spirit communication. I believe that when we are doing when we're doing whatever it is in our life that we do that's our creative side, that we open ourselves and we quiet our minds enough to allow inspiration to come through. And where does inspiration come from, right? It comes from our higher consciousness. And so...
But that's an important point, because I've been thinking about that. And so you're saying there are our creativity, our act of creation is what connects us to something beyond ourselves, to our greater self. That, and that's how we kind of make manifest the divine spark in spirit.
Exactly, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So did you start to become creative that way?
Yes, I did. I started a lot more. I started developing a lot more creative endeavors, and I started devoting more time in my life to those creative aspects in my life. For me, it was silversmithing. I've always been very creative with my hands and that sort of thing, and I let it evolve. Now I'm creative with writing. It's transition, but it allowed me to suddenly start to shift the way I was living my life. I was starting to balance my life. So I not only just used my mind, but I started bringing my heart and my heart consciousness into the way I was living my life. And then bringing those two together to try to balance it as much as I possibly could.
Mm. But then you had another experience. You got ill, right? Was that after that?
Yes, it was. In 2000, I was in my office at the dialysis center, and it felt like my back exploded. And what happened was I went to the emergency department, and they went through a bunch of tests. It took forever, but they thought I was having a heart attack, and then they ruled that out. But eventually, I was sitting in this room after I'd had, x-rays and EKGs and all this stuff, and the nurse came into my room, and this was a pivotal moment. This nurse came into the room, and she was crying, and I recognized this moment. I recognized it as one of those interactions that I had lived in my life review where I was living my future. And I recognized that the doctor was going to come in the door. I knew exactly what he was going to say. And he came in and he was hemming and hawing. He was kind of like, well, Dave, And and I let him. I know I'm going to regret that in my next life review. But I let him sweat it out a little bit as he had to tell me that I had these masses in my lung and that they had metastasized into my spine. They ate away 2.5 bones of my thoracic, and the tumor could no longer support the weight of my spine, and so my spine had collapsed. And that's where the pain had all come from. But this cancer, they kept me for tests for over a week, and they found I had lesions in my hip, my brain, and my kidneys. And the prognosis was pretty bleak. They felt that I had maybe 6 to 8 weeks to survive. And so they told me that they were going to make me as comfortable as possible. They'd prescribed morphine and Percocet, to keep the pain at bay. And they told me to get my affairs in order because I didn't have that much longer to live. And I said no. I said no way, because I had seen in that life review that I was going to have cancer. It's kind of funny, though. I didn't know when that was going to happen. It's kind of funny. In the light, time doesn't exist. So when you're previewing this life and when you're going through all that, it's hard to correlate it with this linear life that we have to live here in this physicality that we exist in. So I didn't really quite understand when I was going to have the cancer. And I was a bit surprised that it happened when it did. Because I thought, in my mind,
You knew that you were going to live.
Yeah, I knew I was going to go through the cancer. But I also saw I was going to live beyond it. I knew I was going to survive it because I saw that in the life review, too. So when they told me that they were just going to let me expire, I said, no, we're going to treat it. We're going to treat this. And I was able to put together a healthcare team that supported me. And I used traditional medicine as well as holistic medicine because I was listening to spirit. Spirit was kind of guided me as to what was going to work for me, because what works for me isn't necessarily going to work for everyone with that prognosis. But for me, spirit was very clear and helped me along the way. And that's kind of what the book I wrote, The Voyage of Purpose, it talks about how the first experience gave me some tools on how to live my life, and the second experience taught me even more. And then in between there, I talk about how I learned to live with these different aspects that I'd learned in these spiritual experiences, to the point that when I got to the cancer, I now had some tools that I could use to help me to overcome this challenge, because I knew I was going to survive it. But
why do you think that happened to you? I mean, what did you need to learn and help other people with in that experience that you weren't, in a way, already doing?
You know, I believe that this was an agreement. This was an agreement that I made when I came into this life, and then I re-accepted it when I accepted coming back to this life the second time. So in my birth and in the near-death experience, I had accepted to take this challenge on of stage 4 lung cancer.
But why? I mean, what purpose did it serve? Does it serve? I'm just curious. Maybe you know, maybe you don't.
Yeah, exactly. When do we reach out for our spirituality the most? Is when we're suffering the most, right? Mm. Well, I had to go through the suffering of the pain and the cancer and the chemo and the radiation, because there was a purpose for me to experience that. It allowed me to be able to do the work I'm doing now, because now I work with experiencers and I work with people that have had have a terminal diagnosis, that sort of thing. And so it allowed me, those experiences gave me a knowing that I wouldn't otherwise have had. So it was kind of funny when I would, one of the things that Spirit taught me when I was diagnosed was a very simple thing, and it's to be grateful. And I was grateful. It was kind of, it sounds a little twisted, Alan, but every morning I would get up and I would be grateful for the opportunity to go through all the suffering, everything that I was going through, because I knew there was a purpose for it on the other side of it. Once I was healed, I knew there was a purpose.
This is to help others. Is that what the purpose of it was?
Yes, to be of service, exactly. It taught me how to be of service.
Mm. So the voyage but it still continues. I mean, your voyage.
Exactly. It doesn't stop. No, it doesn't end there, because we continually learn and we continually grow. In fact, that whole experience, it taught me mindfulness. I didn't really have a concept of mindfulness until I had to live with pain every day.
What does it mean, what does that mean to you? What does mindfulness mean?
Yeah, to me, I use mindfulness every day to bring me into this moment, because I don't take any pain medication. I got myself off the morphine and Percocet, and I use mindfulness to control the pain. Well, my pain is 24/7. It's something that is here all the time. And so I use mindfulness to kind of to keep me in the moment, but to take the pain and to put the pain aside.
But what, and, But I'm just curious, what is mindfulness? How do you describe that?
Well, I would say mindfulness is being aware of your consciousness in this moment.
Being aware in each moment is mindfulness, you're saying.
That's of your consciousness, of your greater consciousness. So bring your greater consciousness into this moment.
So you're aware of
every
pain.
Moment.
You're aware of the pain each moment. That's what's going on. I mean,
In the morning when I'm doing those gratitudes, I go into my pain. The pain becomes everything. I go into the pain and allow it, immerse myself into it so deeply that the pain becomes everything. And by doing that, then I can set it aside because it's, I hate to use the word control, but it's like I now, because I am the pain, I now can do with it as I need. And so I can set the pain aside, and it allows me then to live my life. The pain is still there. It hasn't gone anywhere, but it doesn't control me anymore because through mindfulness, I control it.
Uh-huh. So, Joe, so let me just understand. So you're just really, really present with what it feels like to be in pain, and then you're sort of overcome it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you can transcend it then. Exactly.
Uh-huh. And the pain is from what? Because of your deterioration in the spine? What's it?
Right. When my spine collapsed, I had to live with a collapsed spine for over a year before they would do some stabilization surgeries. I actually had to put titanium construct in my spine to stabilize it. And they weren't even going to do that because they thought I was dying of lung cancer. So that's why it took over a year for anybody to work on my spine, because they thought I was going to die. after 6 months, they actually found that I was cancer free after 6 months.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it? So now that you've had all these amazing experiences in your life, and you wrote this book, but what is it that you're doing in the world? I mean, what's your spiritual practice? How are you dealing with people day to day?
Well, now I found the important thing for me now is, because this is kind of, the neat thing about this is it's, because I lost one lung, I have a titanium spine, I can't feel my hands or feet, I'm classified disabled. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of interesting that classifying me disabled allows me now to really do my real work. And so what I do now is I have a group here in Central New York where it's just for experiencers. And when I say
experiencers,
yeah,
near-death experiences?
Well, not just near-death experiences. Any form of spiritually transformative experience. Because we know there's a lot of different types of spiritual experiences, like a kundalini experience, spontaneous spiritual awakenings. They're all the same kind of... I mean, they all have the same after effects. And so I don't want experiencers to kind of go through what I went through, where I had that self-isolation for 11 years.
Mm.
So I want them to try to integrate these experiences in a more whole and healthy way. So what I do nowadays is I work with experiencers. Excuse me. I work with them. We have a group, and it's kind of a peer-to-peer group where we share our experiences with one another, but no one's really a leader. What we do is we use our own experiences and our own integration to kind of help and to guide each other into how to, you know, get beyond some of the challenges that life throws at us. Because, you know, you've got to learn how to live with these things, because you've got to integrate new spiritual values with these earthly expectations that are our culture you know. And then a lot of times experiencers come back and they have heightened sensitivities and newfound abilities that, you know, they have to learn how to use and how to live with and that sort of thing. Like some of the sensitivities, like, you know, many experiencers come back and they're sensitive to light. Many are sensitive to medication and sound and sometimes just, you know, chemicals, things like that, or maybe their food, their diet changes after experiences. And so they have to learn how to get through that. And it's also very supportive to know that you're not alone. You know, other people are going through these same things. It's kind of interesting. In 2004, there was a study at the University of Chicago that said that 35.7% of the U.S. adult population has had some form of religious or spiritually transformative experience. That's huge. That's a third of the nation has had some form of experience. And we don't talk about it, and we don't have any support.
I was going to say, you don't acknowledge it as a cultural fact.
But, no.
But don't you think that the world is changing in a way where this will be more common knowledge? Everything you've shared about your life and your greater life, that'll be part of who we are.
I think it is. I think we need boots on the ground to kind of to help it along. You know, I think because it isn't in the mainstream consciousness, we've got to kind of help bring it there a little bit. And that's where shows like yours and things like this are helping to raise that awareness.
If this is the overall plan of the life, I mean, in a way it doesn't make sense why there's all this other stuff going on, which is also from the same source, but it's all so distorted. Why is that happening when what you're saying makes the most sense? It feels the most true for what happened, and how is this other stuff around?
Yeah, I've got some theories about that. I feel that a lot of this there's just some craziness out there in the world, you know. But I really feel that I mentioned earlier, you know, when do we reach out for our true being? When do we reach out for our core beliefs, you know, is when we're really suffering, right? Well, mm-hmm. Look at the world right now. You know, the world is suffering. It's on the verge of, we're seeing major social economic systems breaking down. We're seeing, you know, we're just seeing a lot of social structure, you know, imploding. And that's a lot of suffering, you know. And through this suffering, are we going to create this new dawn? Are we going to create a new reality? That's, you know.
Well, it looks like that's our only choice, or, you know, collapse completely. So would you say when you saw your purpose in that life review, this is the purpose you saw then?
Yeah, that now I get to talk to people. I get to share about trying to awaken themselves, because it you don't have to die to have these experiences. We're all capable of communicating with our spirit, and, you know, so now I get to talk to people about awakening. In fact, on a daily basis, I put a lot of reflections out on Twitter and Facebook, and I do it under the name of Dharma Talks. And so you can find me on Facebook and Twitter on Dharma Talks. And I put these reflections out about our conscious awakening, about how can we create a better community? How can we do these sort of things? So that's a lot of what my focus, a lot of what my spirit communication is giving me these days to share, you know, and so it's a way I can give back.
Well, I do feel like you don't seem like you're someone who's suffering. Would you say you're pretty content and fulfilled in purpose? I mean, what's going on with you? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm. Well, I do. I mean, I have to deal with the pain because they stabilized it, that I still deal with a lot of pain. It's just a part of my life. But you know what? it doesn't control me. I am very satisfied that this is, because I have a clearer understanding of who I am and what my purpose is. And I allow life to unfold now. I don't try to control it so much as I allow it to unfold. And I found that life flows a lot better when you're in that flow and you're allowing it to just be. You know, I'm very accepting of my life situation, that yeah, I've got some issues, but I can work on it because I know I can change my future. I've seen it. I've done it, you know, and I know that we all have that capacity. There's so much potential out there. We just have to tap into our true intentions and then allow it to unfold.
And what about your soul family? Do you feel connected to them? Are they around?
Yeah, I'm still very much connected to them. They are a major part of my life. That's when I talk about spirit communication, that's who I'm talking about. I'm talking because I have this light within me. This fragment of my light is here in this physical life, and it communicates to my greater consciousness. And my soul family is there with my greater consciousness. We're all interconnected together. And so I believe that my spirit communication is with my soul family at all times.
So you're saying the part of you that's in pain, the physical body, is just a very small piece of this greater light being that you are.
Yes, yes.
And that's the satisfaction, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It knowing that and understanding that now has brought so much more into my life. It's made my life that much richer. And I really understand that, you know, it's all about our life's experiences. By bringing our real consciousness into our life's experiences and not just our ego mind, you know. We have to balance out that ego mind with our heart-centered mind, you know.
Well, I'm really excited about hearing more. I mean, you're going to be talking in New York tomorrow. What will you be adding to, of course, you'll repeat some of what we said, but what else do you add in your talks?
Well, I think I want to talk about becoming more of an authentic being, you know, and living our lives that way, because that's how we're going to build our future.
What does it mean to be authentic? How do you define that?
Well, you know, when we start to live our life with heart-centered consciousness, then it's kind of neat. We go through a transformation. Excuse me.
It's okay.
And we start to find our love, and we start to find our purpose, and that's when we allow life to unfold, and we begin to be more mindful where we're living in this present moment, and we're doing the best we can in this moment and the next moment and the next moment, and we're focused on the present and trying to make the present as best as we possibly can, then we begin to build a brighter future.
And don't you see a planet where everyone's really living on that level?
You know, I don't know that we're going to see it in our lifetime, because I think we picked a lifetime that's a little tough right now. I hope to see in our children's time that sort of life, yes.
Well, I see some of it happening right now. Of course, it's fragmented, it's in pockets, but I do see what's possible for humanity.
Yes, exactly. And that's what gives me so much hope, is because I see the same thing. It's interesting, on Twitter, I speak to people all around the world every day, and we all have that same spiritual message that, you know, we're all looking for that element in our life where we can live with, you know, our spiritual being, with our love, and to walk our path that way. So, I mean, we're all saying, I don't care if we live in Uzbekistan or the United States or Canada or the Middle East or Southeast Asia, we're all saying the same thing. And I find a lot of encouragement in that.
Well, there's a lot of encouragement in just hearing you, because you experienced it. It's not just a theory or a possibility. It's a reality for you of this great being that you are. So
It's funny because it's my life, so it doesn't seem so phenomenal to me.
But it is pretty amazing. It really, really, it's not ordinary.
Yeah. But it's humbling at the same time.
Well, and what about your, I guess your wife must be very supportive and open. She wrote the book with you and very into this as well.
Well, yeah, my wife, she supports me. She may not understand it 100% because it's very hard, but she's had some spiritual experiences of her own, and so she's kind of on a very similar path as me, and so we allow each other to grow, and we allow each other to be who we are, and we support each other in our own paths, you know.
Well, she's very supportive of you and your message in the world. So I look forward to meeting you tomorrow.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to it. It should be a really fun time.
All right. And so your website again is Dharma Talks?
Yes, you can. I have a website. It's called dharmatalks.com. You can find me on Facebook under Dharma Talks and on Twitter as Dharma Talks. So,
and your book is Voyage of Purpose, and that was just released.
Yes, it just came out October 1st. It was published by Findhorn Press out of Scotland. It's being distributed globally, so it's in the UK, here in the United States, Australia, New Zealand. You can get it. It's most English speaking countries. You can find the book.
And David Bennett, who I've been talking to, will be in New York City tomorrow, March 28th, 2012, at the Met Center. That's 214 West 29th Street, 16th floor at 7 p.m., $15 at the door. And this is sponsored by FION, the Friends of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. So, thank you. Any final words you'd like to just share before we go?
Well, you know that we all have within us the ability to, and I'm a firm believer in meditation and stillness, and I think that when we take the time to listen, that we can, it's one of the greatest things we can do for ourselves. There's always time to breathe and relax and focus. And when we do that, spirit is patiently waiting for us to connect.
Because it's right there. It seems like it's we just drop in into ourselves, and that great spirit that we are seems to be waiting for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, David. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Sure, and we'll do it again. We'll have more talks. I'm interested in what you're saying. So, thank
great.
You. This is John Steinfeld from New Realities. I was talking to David Bennett, author of Voyage of Purpose, again, being in New York tomorrow on March 28th, 2012 at the Medicine for 214 West 29th Street. See you there. This is John Steinfeld. And check out my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening. Like a star, like a star.